outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
So Wayne, you guys definitely took me back to middle school, riding on the school bus on the way to a track meet.
How'd we do that?
Well, you and Sarah are sharing headphones. So that, I mean, that takes me back to...
It's hard to tell that Sarah's sharing the headphone. I'm definitely sharing it. It's hard to tell she is.
Oh, okay, okay. She's got it kind of tucked under. Oh, and now you guys...
Now you know we are.
I dropped my paper.
And that right there... That the challenge of the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. If you move too far, then you rip the headphone out of their ear or your ear, and that mixtape just doesn't continue on.
Yep.
No, it does not.
So we have another, we have somebody else in the studio with us, your mobile studio. Your tour date companion is with you.
My mobile studio here from Damascus, Virginia. This is where Paul fell off his horse and got converted to Jesus. No, I don't think that was you.
Wrong continent, I feel like.
That probably is. Yeah, I drove down here yesterday and set up to record today. So Sarah's going to join us today. Make sure she's still alive. Family wants to see visual evidence that Sarah's still with me.
Ah, okay.
I'm still here.
And if you can verify the date, then we're good.
I mean, we're going live right now, so it's 10/28, 2022 live, so I think she is still here.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is Sarah Jacobson, who's joined us for the tour.
Hello.
Heck of a ride down here yesterday, I got to tell you. It was a repeat of the happiest day in my life, although it didn't have the same overtones to it, but man, we... cut out through the color, high stuff on the Blue Ridge, coming down the Blue Ridge, and there was every turn of the vehicle, just more and more color. We're playing music that's just beautiful. It's just, I was crying again. I just was reduced to joy. It was fabulous. It was just a fabulous drive down here.
It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Just some hillsides were just all orange and yellow.
Red.
Beautiful. And some red in there.
Beautiful. So we had a great drive down here yesterday, and actually a couple nights before, we had a great evening together. We were alone in our campsite and fired up the old fire pit and pulled out the letter that Sarah wrote me when she left. I brought it with me out here, and she knew I had it, and we thought, you know, let's just go over this letter. Let's make sure there's nothing in here we still need to process or talk about. And then we're going to burn it. So we're going to leave it here. We're not going to bring it back to California with us because Sarah's already thrown the file away on her computer. And so it was the only copy of the letter left in the world. And so we spent about an hour going through it page by page. And what did you discover going through it? You laughed your way through the letter you wrote that tore my heart to shreds. So she's laughing.
Because what was it like, Sarah, to... you know, with this amount of time distance, to hear those words being read back to you, what was that like?
It was unbelievable. Reading it was like, how do I describe it? In the midst of thinking from reading the book, The Body Keeps the Score, from all the trauma that has been processed and books we've learned and have from and read through, and reading it, it was just... the agony of trauma, just reading through all of it.
She wasn't in the agony of trauma. That's not what she means. She just, it reminds her of the agony of that trauma. Yeah, because she was laughing. Some of the most hurtful things that when I read it, I'm going, this can't be true. This cannot be true. And then Sarah just starts laughing when I read it to her. And she's going, boy, that was trauma talking.
I mean, but that just shows that showed me this. You might understand this, Kyle, and be able to give words to what I'm thinking. The space in my head of, I could see the trauma just everywhere and how things that he would say or do would just, that weren't just not normal, but well, just reactions, you know, just the way we are, husband, wife, two people, and how I just was so triggered and that I remember the feelings and how I felt at the time in which I wrote the letter.
Yeah.
But putting the trauma and the learning curve that I have learned and processed and how he's been since all of that been revealed and putting that into that letter, it's just it's a flip. It's a flip and it's real, but yet it's not real, but yet I see the trauma mode that I was in, I guess. Mm-hmm. Basically, is that the only way I know how to describe it? It was absurd in some of the things of how I...
That's how I felt when I read it the first time. This is absurd. It's nice that she felt the same way. And there's a few things in there that, yeah, I can learn from. There's ways that I communicate with Sarah. So there are definitely things that we took away from the letter in a positive construct. But I really love the fact that there were these other things where she's going, yeah, that's absurd. Yeah, that's what I thought too when I read.
But then some of the things and what he did and how I reacted, from Bi Keep Score and from my PTSD and all that, I know, and from the trauma, I was reacting, but I was reacting, and now it's a different, the cause of, the main thing is the cause, I guess this is a better way to describe it, the cause of all that feelings was, in my eyes now, placed upon a different entity. And not on him. And I see the...
Yay! I'm excited about that.
I see the entity in which, where it was doing, where it's originated. And so, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's interesting, as I'm hearing you talk, it's like almost this blend of almost an outer body experience, right? Yeah. Where you're sitting here looking back at this and like, I know that's familiar. There's a part of me that recognizes that I was there, and yet now sitting with a completely different lens, being able to see it for what it was with a different perspective and a different heart behind it. It's like, oh, wow. Like, wow. Okay. That's so different. Right. And it's disarmed. It's not the trauma has been placed in the accurate source. And so that has been melded together to where it's like, okay, the person who inflicted the trauma also is being assigned the emotional and physical response to the trauma, right? Versus somebody who, you know, you didn't know the source of the trauma. And so you've got a surrogate who is receiving, receiving the credit for the trauma, but may not be the source of that trauma.
Amen, amen, and amen. Yeah, I'm glad I'm no longer the source of that trauma in her mind. Wow.
And the body keeps the score. I mean, I guess some of the things that, you know, learning from the body keeps the score, I can see how that fits into that. I mean, it's just the words that were used and that I used in there, that the guilt, the shame, the horribleness, the trying to think of some of the other ones offhand, you know, just can't live anymore. And just the depth of the pain, which I've seen and heard from so many people also as we talked, and also from reading the books and hearing about them and so, and seeing, and then suicidal and all that.
Yeah.
It makes sense I can put that alongside with the body keeps the score and all the other things. And it creates a whole different picture.
It shows how much progress we've made. That's what's been fun. Yeah. It's the progress that we've made in the last 6 months, the relationship we have now, the ability to talk our way, laugh our way, cry our way through some of that letter, and then just burn it. Each page we threw in, it was just like, yeah, this is awesome. And then it was all gone. There's nothing left of it in the world. And then I just got down on my knees and just told, made Sarah promises I made to her the day I married her and some extra ones. And she responded in kind, and I pronounced this man and wife again. So I get to do that.
I love that.
So it was a warm, romantic, wonderful evening, putting all that behind us. And really, that's the day we're leaving the East Coast to head back toward the West now. So we're moving back this way. So it was kind of like we drove all the way, left it there, and now we're going home. we listened to something we wanted to listen to coming out here, Kurt Thompson's season four of his podcast on trauma. Yep. We hadn't listened to it at all yet. I'd listened to it previously. Sarah had not. So I put it on. And that was another one of those markers where I listened to this while the first episode while we were still apart. Yep. And I can remember the emotion of listening to it and the discovery of it. And now where God has moved us from the lowest day in my life 6-7 months ago to the happiest days of my life. It's just been a great, you know, if we were Israel, we would have built an altar there of stones and left it. Instead, we left a few ashes in the ground.
So what does it look like, though, as you guys are moving forward, to be able to lay down those monuments? I mean, obviously, that was a beautiful experience that the two of you had of working through the letter, burning those things, recommitting yourselves to one another in just a unique way after 47 years of marriage. What does it look like to put down a stake to a new beginning? Like, what are some other things, or what are some other ways that you see yourselves as a couple putting down a stakes to new beginnings or a new season of your journey in your marriage together?
Ben,
I don't know how to answer that, because I don't think we have put any stakes down yet. Yeah. We're just letting that love that we've always had come to the forefront again, and the trauma's not in the way of that. We don't know what it's going to look like when we get back. That's part of the trip back, is to kind of discover how do we want to live differently, and what is that going to look like? I don't think we've even talked about it yet. Mm-mm. And I haven't thought about it much yet.
So what does right now, for the two of you, what does your window of tolerance for your marriage look like? As you guys are moving into this.
What does that mean?
So we talked about window of tolerance for individuals, right? So in Trying Softly, you have this window of tolerance that you're able to operate in, where you're moving from a wholehearted space. You're not reacting out of trauma. You're not moving in this space of desperation or, you know, fight, flight, freeze, fawn. So what, as you guys have moved in over the last 6-8 months and have gone through this incredible healing process, you got your marriage also has a window of tolerance, right? For what the two of you can do together, for what relating with one another looks like, with relating with others look like. How have you seen that window of tolerance change? And what does it even look like now as you're moving in a new space of freedom? Does that make sense?
Yeah, trying to be honest. And last night, some things having the discussion. I need to learn to say no.
not to me.
No.
Not to me. She's got the freedom to say no to me, but it's other people that she's. We had a long talk about it because she felt she got trapped into something.
Yeah, it's another new thing learning, but it's touch wood with some of the things we were talking about. It's a new revelation in thinking. And that I don't have to do what everybody else asks me to do.
Yeah.
I don't know where the window of tolerance in our marriage is, really. I don't know that we've hit against a wall somewhere, right?
No.
This has been so much fun. We're talking about everything, honestly. We're laughing more than we've ever laughed. We're up at night sometimes processing something. Sarah's processing. But there's been no tension in it. There's been nobody kind of needing some space to settle down. It's been a complete joy and delight. So if there's an edge to this window of tolerance, we've not hit against it yet, at least on this trip.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting because, so this was the reason why I even ask you this is something that's come up in Jess and I's world as well, as looking at what is the window of tolerance for us as a couple, not only at like in our relationship, but then also how do we move in the world in reference to other relationships, other communities, how we're expressing ourselves as a couple in the world. And what does that even look like? Because both Jess and I have identified that we're both, one of our primary trauma responses is fawning. And that results in us sacrificing either elements of our relationship or ourself for the sake of others out of either obligation or guilt or whatever. And like the best thing that I heard this week is I was going through a coaching session and had somebody ask me, Kyle, what does freedom look like for you and Jess right now? And immediately, without any hesitation, with tears in my eyes, I said, is to be able to say a guilt-free no.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? Like, that one. Right? Yeah. And so I, as you were saying that, Sarah, I was like, oh, yeah. The fellow fawners unite. Here we go.
Yeah, we are learning that one.
Well, we haven't learned it yet, but concept is there.
Yeah, right? It's an interesting space of what does it mean to say a guilt-free no, and what does that look like it, in moving in relational window of tolerance, especially as a couple? Because the beauty is, Sarah, you have somebody sitting beside you that's got the freedom and the self-confidence to be like, no.
Like,
right? Like,
always
has. You know, it's like you can say, Wayne, I need you to say a no for me. I need you to give a guilt-free no. He's like, oh, done. Okay, no.
Why, this is hilarious, because Sarah, I've given her permission to say no to me about anything. And she says no to me about all kinds of stuff now. She's really free to go, yeah, that's an ouch. Or, you know, we talked about the ouch thing. She goes, that's an ouch. Yeah. Or, no, let's not do that. She's very free that way. She's really now outside of this, yeah, where she equates selfishness to no. So if you're saying I never have trouble mm-hmm. saying no, that's because I'm one selfish dude, man. In her mind. No, maybe. I don't know.
No, it's true. If you don't do what somebody wants you to do or ask you to do, to me, it's selfish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'm learning with him. I'm trying, you know, to be as honest as I can, but yeah, I mean, I'm just seeing how that's just with everything, you know, and yeah. If anybody asks you it, I just think that I'm just selfish, and then if they get hurt, then I'm mean, or I'm unkind, or unloving.
Yeah.
And then just keeps going on and on, right?
Yeah.
Which saying no sometimes is rude. I'm teaching her ways to say no. So if somebody wants something from her that she doesn't have in her heart to give, and I think the first thing is, you know, if God wanted you to give it, it would be in your heart. It wouldn't need, Sarah's not a selfish person by nature. So if something's not in your heart, I would assume then God hasn't have it for you. But you don't have to just say no or no thanks. You can, but you can also say stuff like, you know, right now that's not going to be good for me. Mm-hmm. And just people are going to give you space. People love this girl. So there's lots of ways to say no without saying no.
Well, I think for me, what I was laughing at in regards to your ability to say no, Wayne, is like for Jess and I, we both have to learn how to help each other set relational boundaries for our the window of tolerance of our marriage, because we both have the natural tendency to fawn. Like if we're moving in that direction, or if we're in a bad space, like that, we both have that response of feeling guilt or angst or et cetera, if we say no, that no isn't an option. Right. But for you, that's something not in a bad way or a selfish way, but you have the ability to set that boundary and to help Sarah learn where that boundary and how to say no and how to build in that threshold of tolerance as a couple, as you guys are moving forward. Even on this trip, I've heard you guys talking about it as you guys have been dialoguing, right? Like, okay, Sarah, that was too much for Sarah, or this was pushing outside of where we were at, so we need to take some time to take a breather, or do we do smaller groups, right? Like I've heard the two of you already dialoguing about what does our window look like as we're moving in the world together as a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I notice how little we do that and talk, and people who call me or contact me, particularly people I don't know well, will just say, you know, I wanted to call you, but I didn't know if I should because maybe you're too busy or whatever. And my answer is, no, you can ask me anything you want, because I'm free enough to say, no, thanks. I don't think I can do that for you. But if people are not, I think most people aren't free to say no. So then the other side of that is you're afraid to ask because you're afraid the other person's going to say yes out of guilt or whatever. And you don't want to, this is the other part of Sarah's thing, I don't want to impose on anybody.
Yeah.
So then if we end up not being honest with each other, then we really can't have the real relationship that needs to happen. Like if someone wants me to do something, they can ask, or I've told people, you know, feel free to call me anytime. And they go, yeah, you're too bad. No, when I say call me anytime, I mean that. If I can't take the call, I won't take the call. It's not like I'm trapped into a relationship with you, because I don't do that. I'm very honest about, I can do that now, I can't do that now. And it really takes a while for people to get comfortable with that, because we're always afraid of imposing because we're afraid of saying no.
I love the fact that the two of you are starting the place where Sarah is learning that, and the two of you are learning that, right, in the context of a couple together, is first starting in your relationship and then saying, okay, we can practice here. Sarah can learn to be comfortable in this space here, learn that it's okay in the context of your love, Wayne, for her, and vice versa, for Sarah's love for you. And then that can start to radiate out into other contexts. But the practice ground is this context of a loving relationship called marriage.
Yeah, and because we're together all the time, I'm backstopping whatever she might say yes to. I'm going, hold on a minute. I may not be in on that. Or if I see her getting two texts, I don't mind saying, let me respond to that person on a text, for instance. And yeah. I might just say, hey, this is from Wayne. And we haven't done that yet because Sarah's been able to manage that so far. But I don't mind jumping on and say, hey, Sarah needs some space right now. So let's give this a break, maybe revisit it in a couple of weeks and just see where she at then. So I think that, yeah, we can help each other sort through that together. But if I wasn't around all the time, I mean, we're around all the time, so we're knowing what the other is thinking and processing.
But when that first started for me with him in our relationship, though, mm-hmm. I had to have permission. He either I asked him a lot, or he would reiterate back to me, I like, don't be mad at me, or don't get upset. I had to preface it and had to make the space for me to be able to be honest or say something that I was afraid was going to be hurtful. And even if he did get hurt, he said, I can't hold his hurt. Yeah. You know, that if I hurt him if I was going to hurt him by something I said, and he'd feel bad. Let me get that all confusing. I'm not supposed to be holding his hurt.
Yeah.
I still need to be honest with what I want to be able to say to him. But I had to, in being honest, I needed permission.
Yeah. Oh, no, I definitely hear that.
This is the art of being genuine, isn't it? Genuine and authentic. And American culture doesn't do it well.
No,
I've noticed that for forever. We're not honest. If somebody asks you for a favor, you have to give it to them. If there's not the genuineness of I can or I can't. And yeah, sometimes being genuine may hurt people. But that's the price of being genuine. To me, it's always been worth it to be genuine. Even if it's going to cause another ripple that we'll have to work through. But let's be genuine about it. And then I think you honor people with genuineness more than you honor them with, like we talked about, if I get a fake yes from somebody and then find out later it was a fake yes and they just did it because they thought I'd feel bad, that never blesses me. I never go, that's so sweet. I'm glad they did that. No, I feel horrible. I feel like I've trespassed on them. So as much as I love being genuine with people, I do invite genuineness with me. I want people to be honest. And maybe the honesty is misplaced, you know, people being genuine sometimes, you know, it's like the old Bob Newhart show where I hate your tie or your face is ugly or whatever. I mean, genuine can be moderated into kind ways, but being genuine is a gift. I think it is a gift. And it's Sarah's learning to give that gift to me. And now we'll learn to give that gift to others. So I'll be good. The reason I wanted Sarah to be with us today, among other things, we got into a discussion in the coach moving from somewhere to somewhere about how much Sarah is holding the trauma of others and just aware. I guess aware is the word you use. I'm just aware of so much trauma in the world. And so I asked her, how are you holding that?
Yeah.
And I love people to hold space for traumatized people without letting the weight of the pain of the world drag you into some pit, right? There's a balance there. So
yeah.
What were you meaning by that? When you're talking about you are much more aware of people's trauma, what does that mean to you?
When I see, or even in reading texts or emails when Wayne reads them, or I see the people, I see and understand their pain there's a sense of sometimes the depth of their pain that's in their faces by how they, the sadness, their eyes, their demeanor, and
or even their story if they're telling it.
Yeah.
The story and in just knowing, I mean, I've been very, very fortunate and blessed in having Wayne, having a husband who's stood next to me and has been the rock upon which I could stand. And not everybody has that. And that breaks my heart.
But you seem to have the awareness. I love the questions you ask people or the encouragements you give them. But you don't walk away oppressed by their pain.
No, I don't walk away.
Which is amazing to me.
Because I know we can't fix, I couldn't fix my pain. I can't fix your pain. I can't fix, we can't fix our own pain. The only thing that we can do is stand alongside of them, listen to them, let them be seen and heard, and not be able, not fix. And with that, knowing that that rests upon them and Father holding him and taking them, that I can't do that. I couldn't do it myself. So I don't take the weight of having to fix them.
But I think that's really a gift. I mean, you could skip over that really fast, but I think where you were traumatized and then learning to live free of it, I think it'd be very easy for you to pick up the trauma of other people and let it diminish your spirit during the day. But you're not even a little bit doing that.
No, my heart just breaks for the space of where they're at, and hoping that they have someone or being a place to where they can be able to be heard and seen and validated. I mean, just the fact of someone is going to listen to me and care for me, and just meaning caring by listening and being a shoulder, because we can't carry, I can't carry their pain. Father's the one that carries them.
Yeah.
Not me. So I don't take the responsibility is not on my shoulders. But the knowing of the depth of their pain.
Do you hear that, though? For someone who took everybody's pain as your responsibility, if you'd just say that as directly as you're saying that, just shows how much God has changed you.
Yeah.
Already, just in a few months. It astounds me, because it's easy to pick up the pain of others. And I say, but you genuinely care. It's not that you don't care. But you're allowing, no, I guess knowing what Father's done in you, that it's that he has to be the one to do it in them too.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a small thing. I think that's huge.
That I mean, trying to leave them or encourage them that, and part of it is still I struggle with why, and I know Wayne has mentioned why me, why. Did God answer my prayer? And why do I have Wayne? Why me? Why do I deserve that? Because I you know, I don't think I deserve that.
Stand by.
I will. Somebody is knocking on our door.
Alrighty, thank you. Cinnamon buns, I guess.
Oh, we got cinnamon rolls.
You had cinnamon rolls delivered to your...
I guess, yeah, wow. We got delivered to...
So. I don't know how much of this makes it on the podcast. What a mess.
And I don't even remember what I was saying. But anyhow, I just... I don't feel like responsible. I know that... And maybe you can speak better than this than me, Carl. I question, and I have a hard time still processing because I feel like with having Wayne and being the gift that he is in my life, why do I deserve that and not others? Why did I get, why me and not others? And I don't think I'm special, and I'm still learning to process that. I guess I am. It's because I'm worthy of love, and I mean, it's still a lot of things that are still working through in my life.
Yeah, I want to circle back to, because just in this last little bit of conversation, you have had two moments where there was a deep emotional response that was going on inside of you as you were talking about Wayne being your rock, and then why me? What's going on there, Sarah? If you're willing to press into that, what's causing that really strong, like the borderline on tears, and your face is changing, and like what's going on there?
Like, what did I do to deserve that? To get someone like Wayne, and why me and not others? This because of the safety space that he has, and also in the fact that he was there in the ways when my trauma lashed out at him.
What do you feel with that, though? Yeah. I think that's what he's getting to. So is it?
That's probably why do I deserve that? Like I said, I'm still probably not worked through everything yet, but.
It's gratefulness partly, right?
Yeah, but I'm just like, I lashed out at him by leaving him, right, and leaving him in a way that was embarrassing.
I missed that. Really? Did you do that?
Embarrassing for both of us, right?
Yeah.
And Wayne he wants me to stop saying I'm sorry, you know, about anything or everything.
We left it by the campfire back there somewhere.
I'm trying, but it's an auto and response.
I wonder if it misses too, just the scandal of particularity that we've talked about, that God would do this for Sarah. Doesn't mean he's not doing it for everyone else on the planet. Doesn't mean everyone gets the same spouse. Everyone gets the same support from a spouse, but God answers the deep, desperate prayer of a child. But it took 64 years. I mean, there's a series of things that it's not like he answered it immediately. I think everybody listening to this, that if you've got trauma in your life and you had a spouse that wasn't supportive, maybe your trauma cost you your marriage, or your spouse's trauma cost you your marriage. And God is still the redeemer in the world. God's still trying to answer things for you and lead you to a place that will have the resources you need to get whole and get well and find freedom. That's, we talked about last week, that's what salvation is. It's setting right what the enemy has destroyed and twisted. And so, I mean, I'm grateful to be in Sarah's life. I am. I would not have traded being alongside her for anything in these last few months. I only wish it had happened sooner. That's my only wish.
And I think partly maybe as we're talking here, that I saw in the letter trauma, just the pain of the trauma, but how the trauma was reacting and destructive towards, or trying to be destructive, maybe not try to be destructive, how angry or painful, I mean, the depth of that, it just, you know, of that, I know what it was, but then I still, when I see people, that resonates in me, but I know what the trauma, the actions and what it cost and the pain that it cost. And that's still real. I don't think I'm trying to beat myself up over that, but I think, I don't know, that partly, I guess, then, you know, why do I deserve this? And I guess I don't know what deserve, the difference between deserve and being a person that God loves us, What does deserve?
Somehow you've earned it in some way. And I don't think
that we don't earn anything.
Well, not from God's hand. Yes. God's generous and kind and loving, and he's going to find a way to us. It amazes me that she's wrestling with this, given the fact, like, almost like, why was it so easy for me when you've had 64 years of being tormented in your body, even though we didn't know the reason? And I think other people would be saying, God, why didn't he answer it sooner? Answer the prayer of a seven-year-old. Why didn't he do it sooner instead of, it took that long to answer it. And she's more concerned about people that haven't had it answered yet or don't have the same support system, which I think is amazing, amazingly kind.
Well, and I also want to challenge something that you said earlier, Sarah, a couple of times, that you're not special. You said that about yourself, and yet I want to challenge that. It's not that you're higher or that your value is higher or lower than anybody else that's hearing this or walking through trauma, but you are incredibly special.
But see, when I hear the word special, I hear...
Comparatively.
Yes, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, that means that I'm thinking of myself more important and more than someone else. That's where I just automatically go.
And I hear that. That's why I wanted to challenge it, because I think that that's part of understanding the difference between the deserve versus the incredible power of God's love for you, is that in his eyes, specifically, he sees you as incredibly special, unique, beloved daughter of his. It doesn't mean that he doesn't value Wayne or me or Jess or anybody else that's listening to this in their journeys and in their processes of healing. You're special, and you deserved a miracle, Sarah, because you were the beloved of the Most High King. That doesn't mean that the next person isn't deserving of their own miracle because they're the beloved as well. But it might look different. It might come in its own time, and they may choose to accept it or not accept it, right? It's their own journey. It's their own process. But yeah, you're incredibly special.
Thank you.
And it's not a comparison. It's just you're incredibly special, period.
It's the Shack. I'm especially fond of that one. And that one. And that one.
Right. But I feel like, and this is something that's really wrestled in me and I'm still wrestling with, is that space of the fawning, right? Mm-hmm. We can't be special. We can't be. Other people can be special, but we can't be.
Mm. No. Because you do, and I have come to see that I felt for most of my life, maybe all of it until recently, is that my purpose in life was just to do what others wanted me to do, and so there's no identity, self identity in that.
Yeah,
which ties into the selfishness of saying no, or the correct feeling unworthy of something special happening for her. And I love that that's sorting out. I love how it's sorting out. I think she's really learning this, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah. And I think that it's just, as you're processing that, it's just interesting to hear the continued journey of that, right? The unpacking of that, the unfolding of that, and saying, oh, okay, Lord, like even just the fact of saying no means that you have an identity, means that you are an individual. Because before, saying no would be compromising your identity, right? Which is a very religiously sounding great identity is, oh no, I am a servant heart. Fawners are amazing servant hearts, and it gets along really, really well in religion, right? But the challenge with that is that then we're completely denying who the individual and the uniqueness of who God's created us to be. And so to say no is then therefore challenging our identity, right? Yes. If we're this servant, this non-identity, we're there to serve others and bless others, then to say no is to challenge our identity versus honoring your identity as a person and a unique individual.
Wayne told me the quote this morning. What was it? Oswald, somebody.
What?
That I am a servant, right?
Oh, this is that Oswald Chambers quote. I am your servant, but you are not my master.
And I had to have him.
Which
may
be the
that.
Best thing she heard this week.
Yeah, because I'm still trying to understand that.
I am your servant, and I'm willing to serve you, but you're not my master. You don't get to define how I serve you. Only Jesus does.
And that's all foreign to me.
Yeah. Oh, I hear that. Yeah. Well, and even it's interesting because I think you are starting to live that, Sarah, whether you're putting language to that yet or not, because if they were still your master, then you would take on their pain. You would take on the responsibility of their trauma, or you would take on the responsibility of, well, I need to leave them better than I found them. Right. And so then all of a sudden you become their master versus being able to be at rest and hold that with them and be present with it without being overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. And I leave them with a sadness of in for them, but then holding them, hoping that they would be able to have encouragement to find that Father would find and a spot for them to be able to be heard and seen.
Yeah. And I think it's important, this, how do we hold people's pain without taking responsibility for it? And I do see Sarah doing that. That's why we got into that discussion that we're running out of time for to have much more here. But I love that she's able to say, I have this awareness. I feel it when I'm with them. And there's even, and it's not just individualized pain. Sarah talks about feeling the trauma of the whole world. She feels that the 42 million or whatever she heard on that TED talk. So it's a big thing, but she's carrying it in a beautiful way because it's not weighing her down. It just lets her be a better lover in the world of people that she crosses paths with who are experiencing it.
And I just hope that as we, just individuals, we can be able to be more aware of those that we cross paths in, to be able to see if they can, or if, I mean, just to take the time to look.
Yeah.
And to even see, I mean, we see people who are traumatized who don't know it. They're acting out on that fawning, fighting, fleeing way, and just, they don't know yet where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And then you have to commend them to God. God has to create the circumstance or whatever that lets that be revealed. Yeah. But we're finding a lot more people willing to talk about it now that Sarah has, bless her heart. She just put it all out there for everybody else. Amazingly brave woman, this one. Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else you guys want?
Cleaning it up there, but anything else?
No. Anything you guys else? Didn't have your favorite things of the day, of the week.
My best thing of the week? Yeah, I know we didn't get it. If we got to my best thing, we got Sarah and I's. The best thing I heard this week was yesterday on the drive over. We were going through a pass of two hillsides emblazoned with color, fire color. Mm. We were listening to Oh Holy Night. I had this song that was up, from which one of my favorites of all time, Celine Dion. Yeah. And I saw an image of a caterpillar in a chrysalis just when the chrysalis turns clear, it's just getting ready to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like God said, I'm making her as beautiful on the inside as she's always been to me on the outside. Mm-hmm. So I was reduced to tears yet again, but I do think that's the best thing I heard this week or any week this year, probably.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com